All right. So again, thank you. It is my pleasure to introduce to you today's speaker, Dr. Tim Hogan. Dr. Tim is a psychologist and certified relations therapist who's co-authored a book called How to Find the Help You Need, A Guide to Psychotherapy and Spiritual Direction. He teaches at Sacred Heart's Major Seminary in Detroit and practices in Plymouth, Michigan, where he resides with his lovely wife and three adult children. Dr. Tim has been a wonderful contributor to RCL Benziger's Family Life program and has been providing for us during this challenging time some webinars that we believe truly will assist you as you continue to minister to those entrusted to your care. So without any further ado, Dr. Tim.
Great. Hey, thank you, Nancy, and it's great to be with parents. I really believe parents are the heroes of this whole epic coronavirus pandemic deal. I've talked to a lot of people. I continue to do Zoom therapy sessions with people, and I know that no one is feeling the pressure like parents are feeling it. So way to go. Hang in there. And thank you to RCL Benziger, Kendall Hunt, for actually sponsoring this to provide some resources. I love it when we get to go in ministry mode and just love up each other. And so this is awesome. Look, I've been studying and reading the articles that have come out that all say what we're supposed to do as parents. And the first thing I'm going to tell you is there's no right way, so we can all relax because they don't all agree. So there's no right way. Let's relax. The second thing I can tell you is that this pandemic is really doing a number on our nervous systems, and it's creating a great deal of suffering for us. And the reason it's creating suffering is because the two systems in our brain that best help us to process stress. One is the way we navigate through rhythms, through schedules, through having structures and rooms that we do work in. All that has disappeared thanks to this, the way we've all are sheltering at home or social distancing. And then the second thing is, you know, this rhythm of relationships. That's the other thing that helps our brain to settle down. So brain scientists are saying this is really increasing stress, and it's increasing stress the most for people who are now at home. And I know that's true for most of us who are parents. A lot of the kids have come home and now we're all trying to work and do school and all that. So my heart does go out to you. I also want this webinar to be this. I want it to be sensitive to the brain science and what's happening to our nervous systems, but then also sensitive to our Catholic spirituality. And I'd like to really integrate these two so that we have some concrete steps we can take to respond. And because here's the thing that, spiritual leaders always remind us. They always remind us that when we suffer, we either get closer to God or further away. And I mean, you don't need to read the spiritual masters to know this. If you have any close friends or family who have kind of become distant from God or distant from church or both, you will probably notice that it happened right around suffering. Suffering has this way of moving us one way or the other. In fact, I like this quote that says, change is inevitable, growth is optional. So this is what's going to happen to us, you know, come 6 months from now, we are going to be very different. We know that. What we don't know is whether we're going to be like, you know, more addicted, you know, more angry, more irritable, or whether we'll be more patient and more loving and more grounded in our connection with Jesus. So it could go either way. The other thing we know from our Catholic, the roots of our Catholicism is that marriage and family life are a sacred path of transformation, absolutely sacred, sacramental, but we call it the domestic church. You know, it's the first church. It's where kids learn about God. It is. And so here's the tricky thing about that. So, you know, you've heard the quote, you know, everyone's normal until you get to know them. Well, my mentor, Stan Tatkin, has another version on that. He says, people are difficult and strange, and the closer they get, the more difficult and the more strange they become. So, I think when we're all together, those people who you're living with right now, odds are good. I know you love them, and I know it's all good, and we're having fun, and it's a treat to have them home. And odds are good. It's becoming, it can be very difficult and strange at times. So that's the big picture. We're going to be suffering. We're going to be changing. Might as well be moving in the direction of growth. And so how do we get on the sacred path of transformation? Man, I've struggled with what are the main things, because I'm going to just go for just maybe a little over a half hour, and then we're going to have a discussion. So what are these four things that I want to suggest? I'm going to suggest these four. Number one, we want to cultivate an emotionally healthy culture at our home. Look, emotional and spiritual health, we now know, are absolutely tangled, intertwined. You can't get one without the other. In fact, if we become less emotionally healthy during this crisis, our spirituality is going to suffer. So we're going to need to do emotional health work. I'm going to give you some tips how you can do that. The second thing is, I think we need to embrace our power as parents to define reality. And what I mean by that is our brains are bombarded with information. As parents, I want to suggest some ways you can set the tone to help our families pay attention to what is most important in the middle of all this. Number three, we need to make marriage a priority. I mean, look, marriage is a sacrament, right? Marriage is this visible sign of an invisible reality. It's a place where we might just learn something about love. I call marriage a crucible, you know, sort of like one of those things that gets really hot and purifies metal. Yeah. Suffering. Yeah. But through that suffering, we get purified. And now is a season where we can really leverage that to grow our marriages. And I'm going to give a few ideas about how we can do that. And then the last thing is structures. If we can create some structures that we can actually reduce stress. Because here's the thing. We've lost the structures that used to keep us going. Some of the normal structures of human life have been taken from us. And so we need to create new ones, like creating different family meeting times around the house so that we know when we're going to meet and people don't have this constant stress about what's going to happen next. So that's over where, and then the last thing we're going to do, we're going to have plenty of time for you to ask questions, for us to discuss. If you find things are working, you can suggest that. We'll share that with the rest of the parents. And so we're really, really excited to do this. But let's just pause and acknowledge God's presence. This is an odd way in some ways for us to connect as the body of Christ, and yet that's what we're doing. And so let's take a moment and surrender this time to God. And we do, Heavenly Father, want to surrender ourselves to you, this really interesting electronic connection we have with one another. We pray that you would flow throughout this connection, that you'd anoint all of us, minds, hearts, souls, bodies. You'd help us to sense what you're up to. You give me the grace to say what's most important, and you give our parents the grace to hear what they need to hear today and let everything else go. So we surrender our families to you. We surrender those that are suffering, especially those that are having a hard time right now. We pray for your community and for us. We surrender all this to you, Jesus, and pray as we live in and through you. Amen. All right, so let's jump in. The first thing I think is so key is to cultivate an emotionally healthy culture. This is one of my favorite lines. I say this to clients all the time. I'm giving it to you for free. The goal is not to feel better in life. The goal is to get better at feeling. And what we mean by that is, what happens in our culture if we can suddenly make space for whatever feelings are coming up? I think of a parent who's trying to get work done because now you're working from home and you got a kid who just loves having you there. So your kid is escaping and knocking on the door and you're getting stressed out and it's you want to be loving. And just think of how much more powerful it is. And we've all probably done this, to be able to say with a loving smile, making lots of eye contact and a big hug, to say, hey, honey, I love you too. Thanks for checking on me. Here's the thing, you know, I'm feeling a little stressed out with work and I'm a little annoyed and irritated with work. It's not about you, it's work. So I'm going to close the door and I'm going to need to be left alone. The idea is we name feelings. When you name them, even if you're in an argument with your spouse, just to be able to name it, say, hey, you know, I'm feeling a little like more angry than I should be about this. So I don't want you to take it personal. I'm just feeling angry. But so when we do that, we create space for vulnerability. In intimacy, most suffering, I can tell you, happens because we have a hard time with our emotions, so we push them down. And when we push them down, really bad things happen. Let me give you an example from my life, because there's many. A year ago, about right now, and I shared the story with the leaders last week, I was going through probably one of the darkest times in my life. I had decided in the fall of 2018 to leave a ministry that I'd been at for 24 years. I've been director for 12. 15 of us were working in a rough neighborhood in Detroit, providing psychotherapy and services, and I was raising money and we're helping people. It was really awesome. But then I got a clear sense it was time to leave. So I announced I was leaving, giving 7 months to find my replacement so the place could go on. Well, the short version is a year ago, right about now, it closed. The board decided to close it. They decided it wasn't viable going forward. Huge sense of loss. Right around then, my wife went to her physician for her regular checkup. And discovered, even though she's healthier than I am, she eats salads and prays and exercises and all that. Anyway, she was diagnosed with cancer, and it had already started spreading, even though she felt perfectly healthy. And so that led to a few surgeries, and then we were looking forward to chemo, and then radiation and then other treatments as well. And so, and we didn't know what that meant, although I didn't know she could really rock that bald head. She actually looks pretty beautiful. But we didn't know what we were heading for. So I was pretty distraught. And so I decided, and my wife and I together decided that once I spent my last day at the counseling center, I'd go for on retreat for a week. And by that, what I mean is I think my wife kind of said, I think I need a break from you and your stress. So why don't you just go on retreat? So I went on a silent retreat and I got on the retreat and I had to make this pivot in my life. So anyway, so I came to my first session with the priest and I said, hey, I got a week here. I really want to use this time to get a new vision statement, a new mission statement, a new priority set. Yeah, the whole thing, because I had missed them. And I even brought my little binder here, which has all that section by section. It's a little OCD. It's okay though. So anyway, I told him all this. He said, what's going on? I told him about my wife, my job and all that. And then he said, huh. And I said, so we need to get to work on my mission statement. And he paused. And he shook his head and he said, no, we're not going to do the mission statement thing. Here's what I want you to do. And what he said was, he said, we need to work on your grief. You need to make space for your grief. It's the first thing you need to do. And this is what I want you to do. I want you to go to the chapel. Now, this is a Passionist retreat house. And so this crucifix was in there, and it was a picture of Jesus. But in this crucifix, Jesus's eyes are open. And he said, I want you to go in there with your journal and start listing some of your losses, some of what you're losing with your wife and the job and your family that you work with. And then look at Jesus and reflect on his passion and his suffering. And then come back and write it. And that's all I want you to do. Good? I said, good. I started to leave. And he said, wait, Tim? I said, yeah. He said, you know, you really don't look that good. And so if you're tired, you should sleep. So I went, I sat in the chapel. I began writing my losses, looking at Jesus, and I just began weeping. And it was a very intensely emotional time. I then went to my room, exhausted, slept most of the day. Super powerful. So then I came back the next day, of course, I brought my binder and said, all right, I'm ready. And he said, no, you're not done grieving yet. Tell me more about your wife. And we went to the chapel, more tears, more long walks and wrestling with God and making sense of my suffering. So the point is, we cannot create an emotionally healthy space in our environment until we make space for grief. And I would just ask you, you know, this whole coronavirus thing, what have you lost? And it would really be worth, and there's an exercise coming that I'll show you, but it would really be worth even now to notice, what have you lost? Many people have lost their jobs. They've lost income. They've lost a sense of place, purpose. They've lost their privacy because their kids, those lovely children are running all around the house. Whatever it is, we have to name that before we can move forward. The second thing we have to do is focus on attachment and attunement. People are always asking me, you know, like, so, not always, but enough people ask me. So what do I say to my kids about this? And pastors call me, how should I preach about this in my Zoom sermon this week? Like, what words do we need? And one of my answers is, especially with kids, what we need is attachment and attunement. And what does that mean, attachment and attunement? Well, when my oldest daughter was going from the second to the third grade, I think it was, she had this great friend. It was her friend since she was 3 years old, good friends of ours. And my daughter is, she was really shy back then and loved to read books and, but she had her one friend, and that's all she needed. She had her books, she had her life, and she had her friend. And, that's, and you know, teachers would say, you really need to get her more friends. And we'd say, you know, okay. But we never worked on it. So anyway, in the middle of all that, crisis struck. And between second and third grade, I think she, her friend was moving to a new school. And so she was going to be heading for her first day in school without her friend. First time ever going to school without her friend at her side. And so I told my wife, hey, babe, I got this, you know. I'm a psychologist. I took the day off. I said, man, I'm going to let her have the most healthy, emotional day you've ever imagined. Wasn't that funny? My arrogance is kind of funny in retrospect. So anyway, I woke up early and made her favorite pancakes. I was pointing out all the cool things in life and how great it was she could go to school. And I took her to school. And then I picked her up after a half day. We went to Panera Bread, sat outside, favorite place, favorite lunch. And I'm sitting there with her. And I said, so did you see anyone you might want to be friends with? And I even said, hey, is it a little different not having Allison around? And then she wasn't talking. So I, feeling like I had given her the best version of Norman Vincent Peale and Tony Robbins combined, and I couldn't believe she wasn't responding. I said, okay, so how are you feeling? I said, I know, honey, why don't you pay attention right down here by your chest? What's going on inside of there? And she looked up and said with great authenticity, we're not at work, Dad. So that whole thing didn't work. So we came home. I felt pretty devastated. We all went to our separate rooms. Finally, it was bedtime. We noticed she had gone to bed without saying goodnight, which she never did. So I actually went into her room, and she was in the upper bunk. I kind of climbed up on the bunk, and I started scratching her back. And suddenly, I could feel the sadness and of what this was like for her. And so I said to her, I'm so sorry, honey. And with that, she climbed to the edge of the bed and jumped into my arms and squeezed me tight and began weeping. What was that? Well, what interpersonal neurobiologists or brain scientists would say is, it wasn't until she sensed that I was kind of in this, had the right vibration, until I was attuned, until I experienced resonance with her. Once there was resonance, she could feel a sense of connection and attachment. Then energy and information could flow back and forth. Then she could receive my positivity and my compassion, and then I could receive her pain. And so she was finally able to do that with me. And the idea here is what we need with our kids more than anything is to create those experiences where we take the time, which I did not do in that experience, to look them in the eye, to sense what they're feeling and say, hey, how's it going? And see if we can't get on that same vibe. Now, here's the difficult thing. When this is going to become most important is during transitions and interactions. Transitions tend to be the emotionally most difficult times of the day for kids. So transitions are when they first wake up in the morning, when they go to bed at night, when they transition from schoolwork to a snack. And this is incredibly difficult now because there are so many transitions now that they're at home, the kids are at home. These are quite difficult. We need to keep in mind when there's a transition to find a way to take a deep breath and to be as fully present as possible. Same with interruptions. When they interrupt us, that's usually when they're in disequilibrium and they need this attunement, this resonance from us. That's when the healing can happen. That's how we cultivate an emotionally healthy culture. Just a little example of that, that morning transition is one of the worst, getting everyone going in the morning. So my wife and I, when our kids were quite young, we made the decision because mornings have been so difficult for us, especially as we had the oldest getting into middle school. We decided that we were going to get up 15 minutes before the kids, you know, take a quick shower, make a pot of coffee, have some coffee, pray real briefly with each other. And then we'd go into their room, scratch their back, and begin that transition into wakefulness. And here's the thing. When we started doing that, the whole house changed. We're going to talk next about a thing about how these starts to the day actually, it's called cognitive priming, and how starting the day positive is one of the best predictors for having a great day, that first 15 minutes. Well, handling that first transition positively made all the difference in the world. The other thing kids need is nonverbal assurance. People ask, what do we say to kids about coronavirus? Should they be worried about their grandparents? Like, and of course, you know, there's nothing much we can say. You know, there's not a lot of theological arguments that are even going to make sense to them about how this is a situation that allows us to get closer to God. It's not some kind of curse from God or whatever. But what does work is when a kid comes to us, when one of our children come to us and they have these questions, here's what we can do. Get on a knee, take a deep breath, make eye contact, kind of have this whole attitude that says, you know, look, I don't know what the future brings, but I know who holds the future. To be able to say, look, we're going to get through this together. We're going to get through this with God's help. This is going to be a time for us to come together as a family. That's what kids need right now if they have questions about what's going to happen with the coronavirus. There's also a thing called special times, which is when we spend time with our kids. We set time aside to play with our kids. I have the link here. And there's a whole bunch of other resources at rclbfamilylife.com. And then we also have lots of ideas like this at the Family Life Parent Connection. If you don't have it, let us know and we'll get someone to get you some samples of that, okay? So number one, we have to cultivate an emotionally healthy culture. The reason we do this, and number three, is because this allows us to bring our feelings to each other and to God. Look, the way we connect with each other is through vulnerability. Vulnerability leads to intimacy. And so we have to be more aware of our feelings so we can share them, so we can feel more bonded. This is how we build emotional intelligence, which also helps our prayer life. A story that you may have heard of, Bishop Ken Utner was a bishop around us. He's passed away, but he told this great story once of how one of his siblings was dying, and he was driving home from the hospital, and he was sharing his feelings with God, and he was kind of yelling and groaning and crying, and finally he said to God, Jesus, I don't trust you. And then he waited for a moment, and then he began to weep. He said, actually, Jesus, I totally trust you. But see, we don't get to that last place if we don't bring our emotions and digest them in the space of relationships. So there's a few resources you can use for that. There's a mood meter. You can print this off, put it in your kitchen, and have people point to what their emotion is. And by the way, you're going to get all these slides, so you don't have to write the stuff down, in case you didn't just write down all those feeling words. The other thing you can do is you can draw a picture. These are just exercises you might want to consult. You can have your family draw pictures. One of the things we used to do is we would have, when we go out, if I take special time out with one of the kids, we would turn our placemat over and we would both draw a picture of one of our favorite family memories. And then we would show it to each other and guess where it was and what happened. And then the cool thing, we would talk about how we felt in it to give us a chance to negotiate and process and language feelings. You could also draw something more stressful, like draw a picture with you, God, and the coronavirus. I mean, what the heck? See what they come up with. Notice what it is. Sometimes pictures tell us more about how we're feeling than our words. The other thing you can do, and this number two is more for you and your journal, to be able to finish these sentences. God, I'm sad that, I'm worried that, some of my losses are, whatever. So that we are bringing the feelings of this difficult season to God. This is number one and by far the most important thing. Number two, the second thing we can do is define reality. One of my favorite quotes says, where attention goes, energy flows, and where energy flows, the mind grows. And what do we mean by that? We mean that at any given time, we have bombarding our nervous system between 10,000 and 50,000 bits of information. Now, the problem is our brain can only process less than 50 bits per second. So the question is, how does our brain choose what to pay attention to? Well, the answer to that is something that many of you know. It's called the reticular activation system. And what it does is it kind of sits at the base of the brain, and it tells us what to look for, right? And so here's a quick example how it works. You can do this with me if you'd like. You've probably done this before, but it's always fun. It takes 10 seconds. So why don't you right now, for 7 seconds, look around the room you're in and count how many things you see that have any green in them, the color green. So go ahead. On your mark, get set, go. You're looking around for green things, counting how many green things you see. And go ahead and close your eyes. And with your eyes closed, remember how many things you just saw that had blue in them. Blue in them. But don't open your eyes, with your eyes closed. And then go ahead and open your eyes and see if you missed anything that had blue in it. And here's what I'm sure happened. When you were looking for green, you didn't even see the blue. And that's because we are constantly telling our mind what's most important. And here's the tool you can use to manipulate, I mean, to coach your children to pay attention to what is most important. And that is by pointing to what is most important. This is called, in case you didn't see it, this is called cognitive priming. So here's one of the most basic things you can do with cognitive priming. You can maximize healthy stimuli and minimize toxins. And what I mean by that is, if you just out of habit, if we just leave CNN or Fox News on, I can guarantee you that is not helping your children. Neither station is. So leave it off. Turn on the news when the kids are not around. Go online. You can get your update online in about 3 minutes, everything you want to know that's going on in the world. But when you leave it on, or imagine this, you leave out bills that need to be paid, or maybe you just leave clutter. You leave clutter out. I do all this. And when we do that, it primes the brain for chaos. It primes the brain for things that aren't healthy. Sometimes people have those beautiful blackboards and they write on it all the chores that people need to do, which is fine. But imagine this, on that blackboard, put something positive like this awesome quote from Paul's letter to the Philippians. Now this is the New Living Translation. So if you're not comfy, you can go get a Catholic translation, but it says, you know, don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank him for all he has done. Then you'll experience God's peace, which exceeds anything understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus. So imagine just having that out. So kids stop every now and then and read it. Or they read it once, but then every time they go by it, their mind gets primed to God's presence in the house. This is the genius behind the Catholic tradition of having a crucifix or the Sacred Heart or different symbols in every room. It's to prime our mind to remember God is at the center of everything we do. The other thing you can do to harness the power of cognitive priming is to focus on gratitude. And so you can journal 3 things per day. You know, like what I mean by that is like when you're sitting down in the morning, you journal 3 things I'm grateful for today. My coffee, the birds outside, the sun. And then I say, whenever you can, add a resurrection memory. And what that means is go back in your life to a time when things weren't working out all that well. Like for me, when I got to college and I was playing football and my freshman year, when I got to camp, I was pretty sure I was going to die in camp. I mean, it was the most overwhelming, traumatic thing I think I'd experienced. And then it worked out great. It turned out to be a great experience. But go back to one of those times, you know, maybe when you were out of money or when a relationship was breaking up, or, and then write what happened after that, how God gave you a resurrection, even in the, after a death. In the evening, you can also, before you go to bed, you can ask people, what wins do you have today? My wife and I do this. What are three wins for the day? This stuff cognitively primes you for positivity. The last thing is watch. We need to watch our questions. Very often, our questions are innocent enough, but if every time we see our children, we're saying, hey, did you get that assignment done? Or when are you going to get that done? Or what time do you have to go to your Zoom class or whatever? We're signaling to them that the most important thing is their work. Rather than when we see them, the first question can be, hey, how's it going? How's it, how you feeling? How's it, you know, like something that indicates that their heart is most important. That's the second thing. The third thing is make marriage a priority. I love this quote. Again, it's from Stan Tatkin, my mentor. He says, stay in each other's care. Or what might even be a better quote is from John Gottman. John Gottman was asked, John Gottman is the, I think, knows more about marriage than anyone except for Jesus. John Gottman, he was a researcher at the University of Washington. He's written some of the best books on marriage. And someone asked him, what's the most important thing? If you can only tell couples one thing, what is it? And he said, that's easy. Here it is. Here's how you make your marriage a priority. Anytime you see your spouse not feeling well, you look over at him and you say, and this is great. He says, you say, hey, baby, what's going on? You don't look right. And if you saw John Gottman, you get the humor. He's like a great hippie. He's like the ultimate hippie. He's, but that's the point. The point is to stay in each other's care. That's how we make marriage a priority. And just a couple of tips here, because this is a little hard during this epidemic, this pandemic. There's two ways we regulate emotionally. One is called self-regulation, and the other is called co-regulation. Self-regulation is the things we do for ourselves. Like we get time in solitude, we journal, we exercise, we do things that nurture ourselves. Co-regulation means I come to you and say, can you help? And we go for dialogue. We say, I need some encouragement. Or we say, can you rub my shoulders? That's co-regulation. Now, here's one of the tricks that God has played on us. The trick is that usually someone who, usually those of us who prefer one type of regulation, like self-regulation, we end up marrying someone who likes the other kind of regulation. And so as you go through this crisis, you might notice that your spouse is asking for more and more time away when you're clamoring for more and more time together. And so one of the great conversations you can have is, how can we protect each other's solitude and yet also get time to connect with each other? This will end a lot of disagreements at home. The other thing is to be intentional about who the lead parent will be. My wife and I found that a lot of times it's easier, especially in times of high stress, to only have one parent parenting at a time. Let the other one go get the stuff done that they need to get done. We likened it to conducting an orchestra. Sometimes it's great to have two conductors. It's beautiful. But a lot of times it's better to identify who wants to lead today or this event or whatever. The other thing is to be aware of what happens with pleasure sex in the midst of stress. When stress is higher in your house, most people, when there's more stress, lose a desire for lovemaking and sexual connection. And so if you're in a marriage with someone who feels that way, you know who they are. So to normalize that, and then to have a conversation around that and how you can nurture each other physically in ways that may not involve lovemaking if it's just not possible because the stress is too high. The last thing we need to do, and then we'll have a time to talk and get some feedback from people, is we need to create structures that reduce stress. Here's the idea. Sometimes one decision will save you from making five more. And that will decrease stress. A real simple thing, like on Sunday, if you decide, what are we going to have for dinner every day this week? And write it out. Make sure you have what you need. And if not, go to the store and get it. And now you're set. You don't have to talk about dinner anymore. Otherwise, every day you have to go through that same cognitive process. So the idea is to create structures that reduce stress. And here's some examples of one. The first is I would suggest a weekly meeting with your spouse. This is a time to simply touch base on these five different things, to be able to sit down and just say, set aside 15 minutes, close the door, tell the kids, don't come unless the house is on fire. Maybe on a Sunday afternoon to just check in with each other. You know, how are we doing? What do we need? I know my wife and I, when we have our weekly meeting, one of the things that keeps coming up is we need to get away. We've had quite a rough year this past year and we need to schedule a vacation, and we have. We've scheduled three, and all three have been canceled for different reasons. What we need is we need to get away, and we're going to. But even more than that, what do we need day by day? The second thing is let's look at the week and create a week that works for both of us. Should we create have a family meeting, which I'll talk about next? Should we schedule Zoom and FaceTime calls to extended family? Look, if you have a parent, if there's a grandparent or someone that's isolated that you're reaching out to with Zoom, you can triple the emotional benefit of your Zoom call with them by scheduling it so that they have time to look forward to it and so they know when it's going to happen. I know very often for me, it's easy to just, you know, call or FaceTime people when it's convenient for me, but boy, does it make a difference if you have someone who's isolated to schedule that meeting. And then again, just alternating the lead parent. Talk about who's going to be the lead parent for different things this week so that we learn how to nurture. These are conversations we didn't need to have before everyone was working from home, right? So you could use this agenda or make up your own. But the other thing you can create is a family meeting to get everyone together. I can tell you one of the tricks to making family meetings work that my wife and I discovered was to make it positive. So we would always finish family meetings by serving some kind of dessert. And maybe don't do that because it's Lent, but find some way to make it positive. It's a great time to check in with people emotionally and normalize for them that that's what families do. We're here for each other emotionally. It can also be a time, again, to go over the weekly schedule, like meals, any need for family recreation or outings, family prayer schedule, you know, Zooming with grandparents, whatever, and then closing the closet. Family meals are huge. People who research what's happening with our families today would tell us that the loss of organized family meals is one of the greatest forces that have destroyed the emotional health of our kids. So with all of us stuck at home, you could really kill it with family meals. So here's four overarching tips. One, again, pre-plan so that you're not trying to organize chaos every day of the week. Second, when everyone sits down, always start with gratitude that will lead into prayer. Maybe a check-in with people, not necessary, but it can be helpful. And then to have to have some time to pray. And we'll talk more about how to do that in a minute. Lighting a candle. And then to have some rules for the table. Of course, no screens. Ask people to eat slowly, to put their fork down between bites. Invite eye contact with each other. Only talk when your mouth is empty. And then go at least 30 minutes, pray at the end, which, by the way, used to be our Catholic tradition. We would always pause at the end and pray. I would suggest if this makes sense, maybe you edit it and then you print it and you put it on your dinner table and say, hey, gang, this is an idea that someone gave us and we're going to try it and see how it goes. You might just be amazed at how incredibly fruitful those meals are. I call that a Eucharistic mentality when we can see God's presence in the breaking of bread as we gather for a family meal. And then family prayer times, and then we'll transition and get feedback from people. But because we don't have the rhythm of going to church, it's can be discouraging to feel like we're not getting a chance to pray. Well, that might be easier to solve than you realize. You know, when our kids were growing up, we would do this, we'd make our own family prayer time. So we would assign roles. We'd have an organizer, either my wife or I. We'd have one kid reading, one kid who's the musician, same kid who's still a musician. We'd have someone who would say the prayers, the prayer. And then if there was anyone who wanted to teach, usually we'd let anyone comment on the reading. But it turns out to be a quite fun thing. One of the things that several families I know have been doing during this whole coronavirus thing is they've created a prayer board. It's a wall. You could get sticky notes. The question is, as a family, who can we be praying for? You know, as the people who work on the front lines, I know in my family, we have several nurses that are on the front lines, working with people who have COVID-19. People who are alone, people who are dying alone. My daughter told us the sad story of someone who passed away without anyone by their side, which never, ever happens at her hospital, but it's happening during the season, to pray for people who are alone. There's all kinds of people, first responders, people who are infected, people who are isolated. Create a prayer board for them so that when you pray as a family, you can look to the board and name the people you're praying for. You might be amazed at how powerful that is to create a sense of God's presence in your house. If you're less comfortable doing that, you can always watch and participate on a screen. I have a few, CatholicTV.org, you can go to your diocesan website. Most dioceses have prayer services and masses that the bishops are leading. And then my favorite is in New Zealand. I just like the accent. It's not deeper than that. So you can go there. They're all recorded, and it can really facilitate your prayer life. So let's bring this together, and then we'll take questions and get feedback. And if you're a fan, if you have things that you think are working, then we'd love to hear from you. So to pull back, I know that was a lot of information. We are in a season right now where suffering is the norm. I say to people, you know, class is in session, and the name of the class is the coronavirus pandemic and God's presence. We need to wrestle with our suffering, with our losses, to see where God's presence is. You know, marriage and family life is the sacred path of transformation, and we can be changed in the direction of growth. And then how do we do that? I've suggested four things. And the first is we can create, cultivate an emotionally healthy culture where we're not so much trying to feel better all the time. We're trying to get better at feeling. And then we can define reality by helping our kids look to the things that are most positive and most helpful, like gratitude. And then we can make our marriage a priority and then create some structures to reduce stress, like family meetings and that kind of thing. So let me say one last thing, and then we'll turn it over to I'll turn it over to Nancy. And that is, I just gave you a lot of ideas, and I struggled with whether I should mention all these ideas, because I know if you're a responsible parent, and you probably are because you're watching a webinar on how to be a better parent, it would be easy to feel overwhelmed. My encouragement for you is to pray with all that I just said, and I'm going to pray and give you a chance to do this right now. And I want you to just notice, maybe there's one thing that struck you, and my encouragement would be just experiment with that one thing for now. And then keep your notes and make sure you get the slides, and you can come back and reread this and see if there's a second thing. But for now, is there just one thing that would be a good move for you as a family? So let's just pause and pray with that. And we do pray, our God, for parents, for us, that you would inspire us and energize us to make this season of change a season of growth. You might give us now a sense for what you would have us do, one small thing maybe, that would allow us to acknowledge your presence in our homes and celebrate it. So we commit ourselves to you. We commit our children to you. We pray for your blessing. We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. And with that, Nancy, I'll turn it over to you.
All right. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, good. My video is slow to start. So anyway, they don't need to see me. Oh, there we go. Well, anyway, if you would go to the next slide. Thanks, Dr. Tim, and we'll get to some of the questions. Just wanted to share with you briefly some of the free resources that we do have available for you and for those entrusted to your care. So please check out on the main RCL Benziger page under resources, free Catholic resources. And there you are going to find some family prayers. If you're looking for some sessions, let's say on Laudato Si, that you could do at home or have your families do at home. And also take note of Dr. Tim's Catholic Parenting 101. Those are very helpful articles that will support your parents' efforts in the home. And if you would go to the next slide, Tim, we want to give you a new feature. Nope, I think we went too fast. Go back one. Up there, okay. That's okay. Go one more. I sent a newer folder. So,
oh, I'm sorry. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
This is the home. Old one. But in I'm any sorry. Case, go back to where it says free Catholic resources, because I want to share one more. I want to share with you an exciting feature. And Susan, you had a question about how can we have ideas for the domestic church when people are not going to Mass. Well, we have a brand new feature there on the Catholic resources called Sunday Celebrations. And posted now is Palm Sunday, and coming up will be Holy Week and Triduum and Easter. But what this will be is a perfect tool for your families that break open the Sunday scriptures, very similar to Liturgy of the Word for children. So there'll be a getting started, the gospel reading, breaking it open, listening and reflecting, connect and conclude, and then prepare for Easter Sunday. So check it out on RCL Benziger's website under free resources, Catholic resources, and they're called Sunday Celebrations. We are also working under a new website under construction that is called Our Family Faith, and that's where we hope to be able to post a lot of additional resources that as we navigate this together and we walk together in faith, how we can support our families, our catechists, and our teachers. And finally, if you're looking for some other resources with our faith formation resources, please contact your local sales representative. They'll be able to give you access, free access to our Flourish platform, which has all of our digital resources available to you. So again, we're here to partner with you, to work with you, to pray with you, and to have some resurrection moments together with you as well. So if you, I'm done, I'm not going to talk anymore, but if you have some additional questions, you can post them in chat and or the Q&A feature. So there was a question about resources in Spanish, and our publisher, Ann Battis, has answered that one, that many of the resources are available in Spanish. Sunday Celebrations is available both English and Spanish. So thanks, Ann. I just learned something new. Dr. Tim, there is a question in Q&A that says, what do you suggest for our families who have one parent praying with this and one spouse who may be more reluctant to start?
Yes, boy, that is really a great question. And that is a common situation, that you might have one parent who is less interested. So here's my first shot at this, and that is, I think that it starts with a conversation with that parent as much as you can, even though it might increase discomfort at the start, to be able to name the feeling, to say, hey, I know this is an area that could be a little tension in it, but I would love to create a prayer time with the kids. And I'm wondering if we could do that in a way that would work for you. I want to respect you as their dad. Could be the mom, I know, but, or is there a way we could do that would work? That would be more workable for you. Maybe that would be a situation where watching something a service on TV would be better, or something that might work for them. I know some families on Good Friday will watch The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the Chronicles of Narnia movie, and have a discussion about Aslan and his love and his death and breaking the magics, whatever. I mean, it's C.S. Lewis, it's good. So maybe there'll be a creative way of doing that. But I think the main thing is, and you know, one other piece I would add to that, it does make sense that you have that conversation with the less religious spouse. And I would work to make that a positive conversation, you know, to create some empathy and connection, maybe in an area that you do agree. And then before you bring this up, to be able to say, man, I love that we're partners. I love we do so much well together and we're good together. I know there's this area that, you know, we do pretty well, even though we're in different places, and it's okay we're in different places. You know, I like to tell couples, you know, if you all were thinking the same thing at the same time, then that would mean someone's not thinking, because we're different, and it's okay. Because the thing that can happen is people who are in that less religious place often feel shame and judgment from us when we are more religious, so that's the big challenge. So that's what I would do. I would kind of work to make it an emotionally healthy connection, and maybe the answer is, maybe I do it and you go for a walk. If you're not comfortable, would you be okay with that if I do a little prayer service and you go for a walk?
Thanks, Tim. And then there was another question about parenting as a single parent. Any suggestions again for support systems for this?
Oh man, absolutely. Well, first of all, yes, and well, for support, I mean, I think now is a good time to see if it might be. I know normally you would have probably parents, grandparents, aunts, siblings, whatever, helping you, and I know that's not happening right now. This is why parents, families are on the front lines. One thing to consider is to have scheduled meetings, maybe with your kids, with people they love, on Zoom, and you can be there for the first few minutes and then go take some time for yourself. I think creating structures that work, making sure they have a signal to know when you are not available, and then when you are available, to make sure you're fully engaged. My experience, especially in single parents, who are the heroes of the world trying to raise kids like that, is that there's kind of, there's this living in the in-between, like I'm trying to get work done, but my kids won't leave me alone. To be able to create structure to say, here's what the structure is for the next hour or two, I'm going to work. And at that time, then you and I are going to sit on the floor and have special time or whatever. And that would be, I mean, I think that would be my best shot. Does that answer the question?
Well, let's think so. We'll hope so. There is a question about on our chat that says, as Catholics, we're not very open to share our faith with others, even in our own family. How true is that? How do you propose to help our families to start this process of sharing our faith?
Great question. So I would, two things come to my mind. One would be, I think when we say share faith, the question is, what do we mean by share faith? Oftentimes when we say share faith, we start sharing our religious beliefs. And I wonder if it's possible for us to share more of our actual testimony. Like, when have I really felt close to God? Or when do I feel close to God now? Especially in non-religious contexts. Because if we're sharing our faith with a family member who doesn't really buy it or is kind of, you know, pushing back, you know, the religious stuff, like I experienced God in the Eucharist, it's true, it's awesome, amazing, but it doesn't always fit. So I love, like, being able to share stories of when I was in nature and I felt God's presence, this is what it felt like, or maybe a time in your life when you had a resurrection moment and how you believe God worked in your life. Those kind of before and then God did stuff and then after, I think those are the easier things. And here's one thing I would suggest, kind of also alive in the faith or maybe a little ahead of you, see if you can have a 5-10 minute conversation with them and run by them what you're thinking of sharing with your kids or with your spouse or so that you can practice it. So, yeah.
Okay. And one other question has popped up is, how do we reduce stress with all the health and sanitizing protocols that are in place? That is, it can freak you out, absolutely. So any suggestions?
Yeah, so I understand your question is, we have so many more triggers for stress right now, like real triggers for stress. How do we, how can we even reduce stress with all these triggers? So one of the things I believe is important is we reduce the triggers as much as possible. You know, so we, even for ourselves, like we give ourselves time at the end of the day to check online to see what news we need. Otherwise, we don't look at it. That would be the first thing, is you reduce the negative triggers. And then the other one is, you know, stress gets reduced, like I said, when we have structure. It gets reduced when we connect meaningfully with other people. We can do that. Some of what I mentioned, others, to use Zoom to connect with people we love. To be aware that this poor nervous system of ours is tending to get on fire. And so we need to use all we can. I know that in my family, we have a WhatsApp thing and we send funny cartoons to people. You know, my sister sent me one this morning that said, with all this hand washing, and it said, look, the answers to my 10th grade history test from 1972. You know, like just to share humor with each other and to remind ourselves that, that it is hard. You know, sometimes just looking in the eye and say, it's hard, and we're going to get through, but it's hard. Sometimes that, you know, it has this paradoxical way of reducing stress, just to embrace that it's painful.
All right. And one other question on our chat. How do you get the other parent more involved, become the lead parent, or at least understand how the lead parent is feeling with all of this? My husband's pretty happy letting me be the lead parent. And he said, and he's a great husband. So again, how, suggestions for sharing that lead parenting part?
Yeah, it's a great question. When, especially if you're good at it, so he just lets you lead, or that's been the habit. I think that's one of the magic things that can happen with a couple meeting, when you meet with your spouse, is you to actually talk about, how do we want to trade off being the lead parent this week? And what are you good at? What am I good at? And, you know, one of the things that I find with couples all the time is, you know, the truth is moms are better at, you know, reducing stress, at making a meal that everyone likes. Like they just have it done. They've just been, you know, if it's a traditional kind of setup, they're better at it. But they're really better at it if the husband is trying to lead, but the wife is there. and mom is right there and everyone knows mom could be doing this better, that's just hard on everybody. So what might need to happen is you might need to, as the parent who tends to be more in lead, you might need to let him do it without you around so he can find his own way of doing it. And then down the road, he can lead with you there. But it's a transition for sure.
Thanks. And we have another comment on the Q&A. Thank you so much for the suggestion of the sacred space. We created one and it has been a huge help. Any tips on how to attune with family that suffer from depression or bipolar?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is a great question, because all this talk of attunement and attachment is great. And when it can get tricky, if someone struggles with depression, and if they do, or anxiety, right now, I can tell you this, the way my phone is blown up, that it's getting worse, because stress makes depression worse. So here's what I would suggest, and I meant to mention this and I did not, and that is one of the ways to process these emotions is to someone, especially someone who struggles with depression or bipolar illness, is to the attunement is going to happen better if you're moving with them. And so maybe to go for a walk with them. And if you want to ask them how they're doing, if they're sitting still and you ask them how they're doing, it could become a downward spiral, but it can work much better if you say, hey, grab your jacket, let's go for a walk, and then go for that walk and talk. Or get everyone out in nature and talk when you're in nature. Those kinds of things are more helpful when you're dealing with those internalizing syndromes like depression.
Great. One final question here is, how can we best support our colleagues and friends with children at home?
Yes, so that's from a leader. I think to share with them anything that you think would be helpful. If there was anything from this webinar that you thought was helpful, you can either send them the whole webinar or just send them the thoughts, that the things that you think would be helpful. I think it all starts with letting our colleagues at home, people who are working at home with their kids now, we have to keep reminding them that this is harder than it looks. I don't think parents give themselves permission to feel just how difficult this is. There's so many layers to it. And so that's the beginning. And, you know, checking in with people regularly, briefly checking in with them, praying with them on the phone, all those things I think are helpful.
Well, thank you. Any other comments or questions in our final few minutes? Well, if you have any questions, it's not a problem if you think of them later. You will receive a copy of the link of the recording as well as my email address so that you can very simply send me out an email and I'll be happy to address those questions you think of later. Also, if you are having, as customers, any challenges with getting on or accessing our digital resources through Flourish, please let us know and we'll make sure one of our sales representatives reaches out to you to make sure you have access to all the free resources through Flourish, as well as our digital other resources found on our corporate website. So again, we want to thank Dr. Tim. We want to thank you for being here. And we just hold you and keep you in our prayers and thoughts during this challenging time. And I hope that you do the same for us. So God bless you. Please stay safe and healthy out there. And we'll see you, if you're interested, next week for Dr. Tim's presentation on encouraging and supporting grandparents. Thanks so much. God bless and have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.